someone who 2 inches of snow is nothing for somebody that
from South Bend.
Lived from South Bend. Senator Joe Donnelly is in the house. Senator, how you doing?
Very, very good. Thanks for having me with you. And I will let you know that at my house in South Bend, where I live, our snow is above the mailbox.
It's above the mailbox.
And it's one of those mailboxes that has a long post down below. And
wow. That's normal for you all. But this does raise, you know, that we've had, you know, some disaster areas in the state, and FEMA's had to do what they need to do. It's been a rough winter all around. But we just had to deal with this and send the snow to Sochi. Let me start with some simple things now. Have you and the president, are you now seeing eye to eye on let's let diplomacy with Iran work? Let's see, are they going to live up to their agreements? Are they going to lie and cheat? And if they lie and cheat, then we can put all kinds of sanctions back on them.
Well, it was never a disagreement. What I've been part of is an effort to make sure that we have a round of sanctions ready to go, mm-hmm. ready to go in a heartbeat, and that is in place.
Right.
That is going to continue to encourage Iran to try to conduct themselves in an appropriate way. And that's why, as part of that legislation, is the sanctions that I've supported before have brought Iran to this place where, when you look, there's a reason they're negotiating. They're not negotiating because they all of a sudden decided we want a more peaceful region. They're negotiating because all of a sudden they're finding out that it's very, very difficult to make basic ends meet for their citizens. Mm-hmm. And so what I thought is having another round of sanctions in place if these – you know, what we've said basically is, look, we're ready to go as long as talks continue in a successful fashion.
Right.
There's no reason to take the next step. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're hoping to continue to see.
Did he understand that when you guys met with him?
You know, I certainly didn't ask him that, but I can tell you this. We met with Bill Clinton later that evening,
mm-hmm.
and Bill Clinton said he thought it was about as good a way to handle this as it could be handled. Mm-hmm. He said this makes perfect sense where you have an understanding that there's an effort to move forward, and then as a back end that you understand if you're not going to try to improve and make things better and start to work with other nations, that there are immediate consequences.
Mm-hmm. Senator Donnelly, you and I have always had nice public chats about the Affordable Care Act. Todd Young, congressman from the 9th Congressional District, has gotten 200 supporters, Democrat and Republican, to sort of repeal that 30-hour requirement for employers. Tom Snyder, Ivy Tech, a lot of Indiana employers saying, hey, we've got to cut back hours. Maybe some people who part-time, we have to cut back their hours. If that gets out of the House, where do you see that going on the Senate side of things?
Well, it's interesting you ask because I am actually the Senate original sponsor, along with Susan Collins.
This is why I tell my Republican friends, yeah. You're cool. Like, Joe's all right. Well, it's good people.
Susan Collins and I are the original sponsors of the 40 Hours is Full-Time Act. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because here in Indiana and everywhere else around the country, if you ask somebody, hey, what's a full-time work week? They'll tell you 40 hours is a full-time work week. And we think we can do this in a way that does not create significant costs, but that at the end of the day results in workers having more hours and businesses having more certainty. And so my deal with the health care bill has been this. There's folks on the left who don't want to change anything, and it's clear we need to continue to work on improving it. Some folks on the right say, we want to repeal this. And then the question you have to ask them is, what are you going to do for the adult who has diabetes, who's never had coverage before but has it for the first time? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do about the 25-year-old who is still on coverage with their parents? And so how do we make this the best possible and most effective program? And that's why Todd has been working that on the House side. I've been working it on the Senate side, and we are working together on it too.
Could it pass?
I think it can, and I am very hopeful that it will pass this year. It'll certainly pass the House.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Senate side, we have very, very significant support. So my guess is we're going to keep working to get a vote on it. Susan Collins, like I said, from Maine, who's a terrific member, is working on it as well. And we hope to get a vote this year. And with both sides meeting on it, I think it can be successful. Look, the president thinks like this. My expectation is that his concern isn't so much it's got to be this or it's got to be that, as opposed to we have to make sure that the funding streams stay in place. And so if you can do this without much of an impact on the funding, I don't think it would be significant concern to him.
Got a question for Senator Donnelly, 239-1310, 239-1310, or send me a text message at 37890, keyword Amos, 37890, keyword Amos. Now, you're a senator for a state where agriculture is very, very important. So is making sure that people who, you know, are low income have access to food stamps. We now have a farm bill. The president has signed it. What's the good in the farm bill for Indiana? What's the not so good in the farm bill for Indiana?
Well, I think the good in the farm bill is very, very significant and is pretty much the main part of the whole thing. I serve on the Ag Committee. And so my job has been for the last year while I've been in the Senate, I served on the Ag Committee when I was in the House and worked on a farm bill there too. And so I had gotten a group together of farmers when I was in the House of Northern Indiana and said, tell me what you need in a farm bill. Tell me what makes sense. I've done the same thing around the state. I traveled around the state the last year meeting with our ag communities everywhere. And so probably the biggest cornerstone we have for Indiana farmers is the piece on risk insurance. And what that does is it puts crop insurance in place. Direct payments are gone. And so there has to be some way of providing some
security. When you say direct payments, you mean to tell me Sam Donaldson doesn't get money anymore for growing alpaca in New Mexico?
That would be right.
Really?
Yeah. And so what we've put in place is crop insurance. And what that is a necessity for our farmers because when they go to the bank in January or February, and they say, look, I need to borrow for these seeds. I need to borrow for these inputs. If you don't have crop insurance, they're not going to make that loan in large measure. Mm-hmm. And so we've put some risk mitigation in place for them through this. In addition, there is significant conservation funds. We have the number one what's called cover crop program in the entire country in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And you go, well, how does that affect Indianapolis? Why would we be interested in this? Right. Here's how it affects Indianapolis. All the donut counties around here, right. Those farms that are using cover crops.
What's cover crop?
Okay, I apologize.
Is that like putting flowers down to protect the land?
Remember, this is urban radio.
Okay, so like when you're finished growing your tomatoes and a couple of ears of corn on the street corner here, like I do back home. I have a garden with two tomato plants in the backyard. When I plow those under, you then throw a little bit of something to keep it green on top and keep everything in place.
Cover crop.
So what they do, this is the interesting part. They help cut down on floods. Mm-hmm. They help cut down on nitrates getting into water because by being in place, it uses all those nutrients. And so one of the biggest benefits that the Indianapolis Water Department has, mm-hmm. that our whole system has here to avoid floods for Indianapolis, is that these fields maintain and hold that water because of what we're doing. So there's a strong program in that. And then in the nutrition area, nutrition funding has been reduced by $9 billion. But we did it in a way that children who are receiving lunches, nutrition programs for families, those critical elements are still in place. And we tried to take a look at this, a long, hard look at where can we save some money. And so as a part of the federal budget, the farm bill actually reduced the deficit.
Is it your first perception, Joe, that when you look at what you folks did with the farm bill and the fact that there was basically no debt ceiling fight on this last go-around, just sort of, you know, came and went on about his business. Is it just Washington is starting to work because people don't have any other choice, or is there something in the Potomac drinking water?
Well, I am very hopeful that people have looked and said, you know, we're sent there not just to get everything we want or that person wants, but that this is like any relationship. You know, I've been married 33 years. And I laughed. I said, we work everything out. I just do whatever she wants me to do.
My wife gets what she wants, and I get what she wants.
And I say that kiddingly to everybody. But it is like any relationship that you work together. And so on the farm bill piece, we had folks, again, on one side going, no cuts at all to the SNAP program. We had folks on the other side saying $40 billion in cuts. And we said, look, this isn't going to work, and this isn't going to work. So how do we make it so that we can keep true to the tenets of the program and still be able to put a farm bill together? We had folks on this side saying no crop insurance, folks on this side saying crop insurance plus the direct payments that we were talking about, the subsidy payments. Right. And we said neither of those is going to work either because no farmer will be able to get a loan. So there's been an effort to try to work together, and we saw just 2 days ago with the debt ceiling that we were able to get it done as well.
We're Senator Joe Donnelly, 239-1310, 239-1310, on the affordable.
And what that has done, I apologize, I'll say real quick, by doing these kind of things that are neither one side or the other, but trying to work together, we've been able to provide 5 years of certainty with a farm bill. We've been able to provide 2 years of certainty with a budget and an appropriations. We know the debt ceiling has been pushed off till next year. So the businesses who have records amount of cash on the sideline, who have said, well, we want to wait till there's some certainty, there's certainty in place. It's time to invest.
And there's also our deficit is down substantially.
And our deficit is down substantially, yeah. When Bill Clinton had his last balanced budget, where he actually had a surplus, spending was at 18% of GDP, mm-hmm. and revenues were at 20% of GDP. At our worst time, during the most difficult economic period we had since the Depression, revenues were at 15%, and I apologize for getting a little wonky on this, and spending was at 24. So you had a huge gap. Okay. Spending is now at 21.
Spending is 21.
Revenues at 17.5.
Revenues, okay. Getting closer.
So they're getting closer, mm-hmm. and we hope that continues, and you know, I'm going to keep pushing for a balanced budget.
Let me go to Bobby right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to ask Senator Donnelly about funding the interstate. I went to Florida, and from Chattanooga all the way down to Miami, they got 3 lanes. Why is it that we don't have 3 lanes from Louisville up to 80-94? Because if you have one accident down up on the interstate, I mean, it sets the whole thing down, especially on days like today.
That's an interesting point.
Well, Bobby, you've hit on something that I think is absolutely critical. As a state, our logistics and what that means is our ability to transport things around. We're dead smack in the middle. You draw a circle around Indianapolis, you have more people within 300 miles than I think anywhere in the country. And so good highways, good logistics, good interstates are critical. I think I-65, Bobby, from here to the Illinois state line, or up to 94, I think you'll see that heading to 3 lanes in a fairly quick fashion. Probably need the same heading down toward New Albany and Jeffersonville.
Will Indiana be able to pay its share? I mean, if Uncle's got 90% of the money, and they probably do because that doesn't come out of the regular treasury, that comes out of the gas taxes and use taxes. But will Brother Pence have his cut, his share?
Well, we have, I made a few comments on Klein Avenue, which is a road up in...
Yeah, that's the bridge they still haven't done yet.
Yes, it is. It's been down for over 4 years. It's in northwest Indiana, and Bobby... they not only took out a whole section of the highway, but they then, in the last month, closed down a section of the highway because the potholes were so big that there were abandoned cars littered all over the road. And so what we have to make a determination...
And that's a state highway.
Right. We have to make a determination that, you know, we are going to keep our infrastructure up because it's a competitive advantage. Our competitive advantage are really, really good skills, really good talents, strong logistics, strong infrastructure. So it's very important.
And I have a road question, funding question. We come back because we have to take a break real quick.
We got to take a break so we can pay some bills so we can get the deficit down. It's Amos and Abdul for a Friday. And we got a text message at 37890, keyword Amos, for Senator Donnelly. Senator, my husband is out of work. He is looking for a job, applying every day online. He went back to college and has a degree. What is the status of the federal unemployment insurance? So now here is a wife on Valentine's Day making a plea. Where are we with that?
We were one vote short in the Senate.
One vote.
The vote was we have to get 60 votes for cloture to move to a vote on the issue itself. And so we had 59. Mm. I am hopeful that as soon as we get back, we'll be able to put it in place. We had what's called a pay for, so that it would not increase the federal deficit.
So something you found where you could pay, we could pay for this.
That's right. And so we were one vote short because they said, well, we know there's a pay for now, but some of the folks were saying there's some tweaks we'd also like to see to the program. And I said, you know, I'm all for working on tweaks on that, but why don't we try to get this done right now and we can get those tweaks in place for the next round.
Joe, one of the things about the debate and discussion we have about unemployment and the extension of unemployment benefits, it's sort of, I think once they right now, you're talking about 99 weeks total federal and state combined. And for a lot of folks, they want to help their fellow Americans who may be out of work, but some of us are worried that it's sort of like your brother-in-law comes over to stay, and the longer you let him stay on the couch, the harder it is for him to get back up on his feet.
Well, I understand the concern on that, and some of the discussions that have taken place with the House are that there also be put in place if you are on the unemployment, that there be training programs that you have a requirement to go into as well. And so, you know, I am very hopeful that that the people who are on unemployment, that they are looking for an opportunity and looking for a chance to have success. And so we're trying to meet all the concerns, which are that it be paid for, that, you know, if the House sends something over that says, look, we want to make sure there's training programs in place as well. I'm for all of that because, you know, at the end of the day, that way that person has more skills and more talent and more ability to be placed. And so my goal is to get everybody a job. And that comes through the private sector, through seeing our economy grow. And I can tell you, Abdul, at this point where the unemployment has been, we have at every other point in the past, we have continued the unemployment. And so what we're trying to do is make sure we have a program in place that we can be a helping hand, but not a place where people just stay.
Are you and your staff getting a sense that employment is going up in Indiana, and we see the number dropping each month? But you're out there, your staff's out there, you got your ear on the ground. What are you really hearing?
We see the economy growing, and I think it's going to continue to grow through this year, through next year. We are on a projection where we should have a fairly strong run. And what we have to do is continue to make sure we're creating more jobs. You look at manufacturing, we're in a position where with the technology that's available, it is helping in making our products more cost competitive to manufacture here. You see other currencies that they've been manipulating in the past, some of these foreign countries, that's tending to go away as well. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the trends are heading in our favor. And I think we can continue to create more jobs and more opportunity here in Indiana and across our country.
Is anything being done at the federal level to help close the skills gap?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's something to hear. A lot of Indiana manufacturers, folks with the Indiana Manufacturing Association say, hey, you know, we've got people, you know, positions going unfilled in plants that don't require a four-year degree, but, you know, some two-year degree, some post-secondary certification training that you know, they could fill these jobs tomorrow, you know, if we have the qualified workforce to do it.
Sure. When I was in the House as a member of the House of Representatives, I was the original sponsor. Myself and Todd Platts from Pennsylvania, we wrote a bill called the America Works Act. And what it does is for federal dollars, federal training dollars that are going to an Ivy Tech type organization or vocational schools, that they be targeted at those areas where jobs are being created and that the funds be available. I went over to the Senate, and it was one of the first bills I wanted to put up, and they said, that is awesome. You are now the co-sponsor. That's how seniority works.
That's how it works.
And I said, I am thrilled to be the co-sponsor. And so there's the America Works Act. There's other ones. And I actually, after the State of the Union, if you remember, the president talked about Vice President Biden becoming the coordinator of a lot of skills efforts. I went up to him after the speech and took him aside and said, look, I want to be all in on this because in Indiana, we're pushing hard. We're leading the nation in per capita manufacturing growth, and we want to see this continue.
239-1310, 239-1310. Oh, we want to tell you that this surprise snow that the weather forecasters this morning said was going to be south of Indianapolis
is all the way up to, like, between here and Kokomo.
And officially now 3 inches of snow at the National Weather Service in Indianapolis. Kevin Gregory just tweeted out facetiously, gee, if you leave now, you'll be home in 3 hours. I think Kevin was just joshing.
We're not Atlanta.
We are. We're heading from here to Kokomo, so I can call you back and let you know exactly where
call Kevin Gregory. You know, give
it's like the old baseball term. I can tell you exactly where the Mendoza line is.
Let me go to William at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello. Good afternoon to everybody.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
If I leave my number with the Amos show today for you to contact me, I would like to come through you to get to the president. I have something very important to ask the president. But if I leave my telephone number with the radio station there, and they'll give it to you, and then I can call you.
Okay, here's what I can promise you.
All right, hold on.
Here's what I can promise you is that we will call his the – people who work there in the White House right away, get the information to them. And, you know, I don't make the final decision of whether or not that gets passed to the president, but I can get you, I can certainly get you to his whole team, and
that'd be great.
We can answer that question for you. Sure.
That'd be great, sir. Thank you.
So, William,
the White House Office of Constituent Service.
That's right. So hold on, William, and Chris will get that information and we'll pass that on. That'll allow us to talk to Pete at 239-1310. Hi, Pete.
Yes, sir. I went to Ivy Tech, got a vocational course in machinist. And I also had a felony at the time when I did it. It's been very hard for me to get a job because of this felony, even though I have a carpentry background, a machinist background, never had a problem on the job. Is there anything that my Senate can do for me as far as helping felons continue to work and provide for their families?
We've got a senator here in Indiana now, a little bit better way to get certain criminal information shielded from employers. It's not a perfect law, but it has come a long way past by huge bipartisan margins in the legislature. Is there any talk at the federal level about some kind of federal solution, or does that have to be state by state?
I think it's a state-by-state solution that you see. One of the things we try to do is stay out of a state's business as much as possible. There are some things that that obviously require federal responsibility, like what are the rights to vote in a federal election, those kind of things. But mostly state-by-state. But what we can do, let me give you a phone number, is 317-226-5555. And we'll be more than happy to try to help, because we have so many companies in our state who are looking for trained workers who have skills. And I am hopeful that, you know, you've paid your dues and just want to contribute and try to build a better country.
Pete, how long ago was the felony?
My last one was in 09.
09. And you're clear? No encumbrances? No probations?
As of right now, no, I'm not guilty of any type of encumbrances.
Okay, all right. I got to get all lawyer on you real quick here. You said as of right now you're not guilty. Is there something pending?
Correct. Yes, there's a pending charge as of now.
Oh, see, that's
that's going to be, that may be a little bit of a problem.
See, the pending is the problem, because you haven't been found guilty or not guilty.
Right. So I could obviously come out of that case not guilty and not have any stipulations behind my background.
Absolutely. But if you're applying now, and while that's not asked in the application, that could be asked if you get past the application point to the interview and you want to be truthful let people know, that could be a problem.
And then if you're found guilty after your start date and you don't show up to work, you may have a little bit of a problem.
All right.
So.
But give his office a call. No joke, okay?
Okay, I've got that number. Thank you.
All right, appreciate it. 239-1310, 239-1310.
Going back to the State of the Union address, the president talked about the minimum wage. And my distinguished colleague and I, we argue about this all...
10-10.
All the time. I think it's a...
10-10 wins.
Bad idea. But assuming you raise the minimum wage, Joe, how do you do it in this economy where there's still so much uncertainty... And we still have people, you know, kind of dropping off the unemployment radar screen. Can we? It's one thing to do it in good times. I can concede that. But how do we do it? You know, in this economy, we're still kind of skating on thin ice.
Well,
he said the economy was turning. His governor says the economy's turning around.
Well, your president says the same thing. So,
so 10-10 wins.
Well, what I'll do is I'm gonna just watch. I'm getting to get a Coke here and watch you guys for about 5 minutes.
You and Dan Coatson get together. Just kind of compare.
As you're talking about a minimum wage, there is no determination yet as to what that would be, and so those levels are open to discussion. It's been about six years since there's been any increase at all. So I believe there needs to be an increase. As to the exact amount, not certain as to what it will be. I remember, I guess it's showing my age that I used to work for the minimum wage of $2.29 an hour. And at another time, I worked for the minimum wage of $2.92 an hour. So I think the minimum wage can be a good thing. It is just trying to... set it at a sweet spot, Amos, as Abdul is indicating, where it does not put us in a position that it affects employment as well.
See, for me, I started out $3.35 an hour.
See, I'm older than you.
1987.
10-10 wins. See, Abdul doesn't even get the
I get the whole 10-10 thing.
Yeah, 10-10 wins. So
let's give people $100 an hour while we're at it. Have wheelbarrows full of money as we go to the grocery store.
Not yet. down the road, we are leaving Afghanistan. Do we need to worry that Karzai and them don't know what they're doing?
Well, we just had an outrageous
Let a whole bunch of situation criminals out.
Lindsey Graham and I helped lead a resolution and a letter saying that developmental aid, you know, we ought to take a look at whether we're going to continue any developmental aid right now in light of the fact that 65 prisoners that we had considered extraordinarily dangerous, that we had considered directly involved in the killing of Americans, the killing of Afghans, that were being held and detained, they let them go. And they let them go yesterday.
Yeah, these are real bad guys.
These are not run of the mill troublemakers. These are people who have killed others, who have been behind suicide bombings. And so Karzai has become a very, very problematic person to try to deal with. We also have what's called a bilateral security agreement. And what that is, and I don't mean to get technical on you, but we are not going to leave behind a kid from Beech Grove or Indianapolis or Lawrence or Terre Haute or Richmond. We are not going to leave behind a man or woman, an American citizen, an American soldier, if they're going to be subject to Afghan judicial
And it's the same as our troops in Germany or our troops in Japan or troops in South Korea or Saudi Arabia.
And we have to have what's called the bilateral security agreement. It is the reason that one of the reasons Iraq is having so many problems right now is Iraq refused to sign that.
Mm-hmm.
And we said we were going to leave about 10,000 behind to continue training, to continue with intelligence gathering. And Iraq said no because they had their own sectarian things they were going to do. And they come to us now and have said repeatedly, it's the biggest mistake we made. And Karzai is doing the same thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, every other member of the Afghan government of what's called the tribal leadership has come to us and said, forget about this guy. He's gone in April. We want to do this with you. We want to do it as soon as
he's leaving.
Away. Yeah.
He's going to get the Swiss bank account.
Yeah.
Let me go.
Our own CIA basically put in there. But getting back to Afghanistan, it's almost sort of like a parallel to Iraq, which is how do we keep these places secure, but at the same time, we can't be there in perpetuity?
Well, it is by increasing the size and the talent and ability of the Afghan national forces as we continue to draw down. And so it's almost like one scale goes up, the other scale goes down. At the end of this year, we'll be at approximately, if we have the agreement put together, approximately 10,000 troops. And what they'll be, Abdul, is trainers, special forces, and intelligence gatherers. And so we will continue to train their army. We will be there for about another year or two in that status, and then everyone will be home.
Do the senators that disagree with that position, do they really understand that the majority of the American people, and I think this crosses party lines and ideology, we want our guys and ladies back home?
We want them home. That's why when I came into Congress in 2007, we were in flames in Iraq. We were falling further and further behind the curve in Afghanistan. And we had hundreds of thousands, you know, in fighting in these places. We are now down to 26,000 approximately.
That's all that's over in Afghanistan.
That's all that's in Afghanistan right now. That'll be drawing down to 10,000 less, or down to approximately 10,000 at the end of the year. And Amos, if we do not get an ironclad agreement to protect our soldiers,
let's bring them all home.
They're all coming home.
And one final thing before we leave: When are we going to get serious to make sure that our men and women who are still serving in the military, no matter where they are, and those who have served, get the help they need? The help to get a job, the help to deal with if they've got demons affecting them. And I mean no disrespect to them, that they get help in dealing with those demons.
And if somebody has a brother who's actually being impacted right now, I'm really interested in.
If I hear the music playing, if I could have a minute or two. Is this. We had as our guest at the State of the Union, Mr. and Mrs. Sexton from Farmland, Indiana, just outside of Muncie. Their son, Jacob, was doing a tour of duty in Afghanistan, came home on R&R halfway through, came home for 2 weeks, and killed himself while he was home. And I am the sponsor of a bill, and it's not me. It's everybody in the Senate is working on this. It happens to be my bill, but it's called the Jacob Sexton Military Suicide Prevention Act. And it is designed to just what you were talking about, both of you were talking about, which is to get them the mental health they need. And it is each year a soldier gets a physical assessment.
Right.
That they put in a section of that. They ask them some questions online, that they put in some questions, you know, are you feeling any additional challenges? Those kind of things.
Right.
And that we get a review from their commanding officer, because the commanding officer can see. Mm-hmm. If things are getting a little different. This man, and again, I apologize, I'm taking a little extra time.
No, this is important.
This young man, Jacob, when his dad was at the funeral, after the funeral, he said to his friends and his buddies and stuff, you know, I didn't see a single sign. Jacob was still the same guy he's always been. Mm-hmm. And his friends said, no, he wasn't, Mr. Sexton. You know, he had things, he had challenges going on. And his folks, like the commanding officers, can pick that up. And so our effort, we have a study that's coming to us within a month from the Department of Defense. It was part of the defense bill this year that's going to tell us the implementation of putting that mental health assessment in each physical assessment as well. And if we can do that, I think we can start to bring the numbers down. Most of this is around it is around personal relationships, financial challenges. Holly Petraeus is now in charge of trying to help our military with financial challenges for their members. And she takes no prisoners. She's extraordinary in that role. I'm sure you can imagine.
Yeah.
But Amos, we have no higher obligation than to make sure they come home safe and sound, come home to their loved ones, and that when they do, they feel at peace and have a good job.
And I think after everybody saw that sergeant that was sitting next to the First Lady and Dr. Jill Biden and his dad and what he went
Amazing.
Through and the representation of all who have served, whether it was Iraq or Afghanistan, going all the way back to Vietnam or Korea or World War II or back to Crispus Attucks way back in the day, we've got to.
Well, when we had a meeting and the president happened to be there and I had a chance to speak and I said, you know, before I talk to you about anything else, I just want to say thank you for bringing Corey. Corey was his name. Mm-hmm. For bringing Corey to the State of the Union, because it showed the whole country the sacrifice some people have made. And he was choked up for a minute or two. And he said, you know, he said, you looked at that young man, and he is of a special category, an extraordinary person. We're very lucky as a country.
That's a good way to end it. Is Valentine's Day.
Well, happy Valentine's Day to my wife.
She's listening. He's on the way. Senator Joe Donnelly, always good to see you. Thanks very much for being with us.
It's a privilege to be with both of you.